1896, Povey versus the City of Jeffersonville.
May it please the court. My name is Andrew Vukanich, and I represent Angelina Povey, the appellant. Ms. Povey appeals from the grant of summary judgment in the district court on both her discrimination and retaliation claims under the Americans with Disabilities Act. There are three issues on appeal: whether the city regarded Ms. Povey as disabled, whether she could perform the essential functions of her position with an accommodation, and whether there was a causal connection between her termination and her complaints of discrimination. With regard to the first issue, we contend that there was sufficient evidence that the city regarded Ms. Povey as being substantially limited in the major life activity of working. We believe the district court erred by requiring us to produce statistical data of the number of jobs and types of jobs that Ms. Povey could not do with a perceived limitation. This court, however, in Cockrum and other cases, has found that statistical data is necessary when it's a job-specific limitation, but not a general or broad limitation like the one that Ms. Povey was perceived as having. Here, Ms. Povey was perceived as having an overall 5-pound lifting restriction and no use of her right hand. We submit that that type of restriction is broad enough and severe enough that statistical data is not required in order for the case to go to a jury to determine whether or not the city perceived Ms. Povey as being disabled. A jury does not need a vocational expert to tell them that just about every job is going to require the use of both hands or lifting 5 pounds or more.
You know, defendant claims that all of Ms. Povey's evidence about whether the city regarded her as disabled related only to her job at the shelter and not to jobs generally, or her abilities generally. What's her best evidence they believe she was disabled from a broad class of jobs?
Well, first and foremost, it's the restriction that they perceived her as having. She didn't actually have that restriction. They misperceived and saw her as being more limited than she actually was. Ms. Calabro testified that Ms. Povey couldn't use her right hand at all. She also testified that she could never lift more than 5 pounds. Harry Wilder, who was also a decision maker, testified that she had a permanent disability and that the city had no job for that. That she can only do jobs with both hands up to a level of 5 pounds. When Harry Wilder was asked in his deposition what kind of jobs Ms. Povey could do, he said no. He couldn't identify any, and then said maybe answer a telephone. We think that the perceived limitation here of an overall 5-pound restriction is the type of restriction that is broad enough that it suggests that she would have substantial limitation in finding other work, because just about every other job requires lifting 5 pounds, whether it be a stock clerk, a waitress, even your honors have more than 5 pounds of documents in front of you in books. Every job you're going to encounter having to lift 5 pounds. And I think this is the kind of general and broad limitation that would require, that does not require statistical data to show that she would have a significant difficulty finding other jobs in the market.
This job does not include heavy lifting. That's okay. Go ahead. Ours. That's true. If you're based in Chicago. That's true.
With respect to the second issue, we submit that there was also evidence that she could perform the essential functions of her position. Essentially, the only task or duty that she could not perform was lifting these blue trays. And she had difficulty lifting the blue trays before she was injured and also after. But lifting the blue trays...
Counsel, isn't it true she had difficulty lifting anything? Not just the blue trays. I mean, she started out, even before she was hurt, she had trouble lifting, didn't she?
She's a slight individual, so she does have trouble lifting heavy objects. But she was able to perform her job.
Even though she
had
a kennel job in which you lift bags of food and... that's a heavy lifting job, isn't it?
The testimony from her supervisor was that she was assigned to the cat room and the infirmary room. And so she didn't encounter having to move dogs all that often. She did not have to lift
heavy... You're saying that cats can't be fat?
Not as heavy as dogs. Not as heavy as dogs.
You've never seen a chihuahua.
Ultimately, the blue trays were only in the puppy room and the surgery room. At the time she was terminated, which is the relevant time, The only task that she could not do was lift these blue trays on her own, and that wasn't part of her day-to-day duties. It was only if she had to work weekends that she would encounter having to lift the blue trays in the puppy room and the surgery room. Before she was injured, during her injury, she could work on Saturdays because she had an office manager there to help her for about 15 minutes just to lift the blue trays. She would still clean them on her own. On Sunday, she had the assistance of a volunteer to help her lift the blue trays. Now, we think that the city could have restructured her job, as the ADA recommends, so that she did not have to work on Saturdays or Sundays, or structure the schedule that she only had to work on Saturdays while she had an office assistant there, or allowed her to use a volunteer on Sundays. We think that she could do the essential functions of her position because day-to-day, Monday through Friday, she was not going to encounter the one thing that she couldn't do anymore. She'd only need 15 minutes of assistance on a Saturday or Sunday to lift the blue trays so that she could clean them. And we think that the district court erred in finding that she could not perform the essential functions of her position.
Do you think that was reasonable for her to, that the defendant had to bring in another person in order to help her do her job on a Sunday?
It would be a volunteer, and there were volunteers previously on Sundays.
Was it always a volunteer, or was it that her coworkers who got the same salary she received had to come in and...
There were volunteers that came in. There were volunteers that helped at the animal shelter on Sundays. It was a coworker on Saturday. There was an office manager there who worked normally. And like I submitted, they could have restructured the schedule so that she would have to work every Saturday so that they didn't have to bring somebody else in, or that she would work Monday through Friday and not Saturday or Sunday. There were possibilities, if they had engaged in the interactive process, that they could have identified an accommodation.
Those would be reasonable? Is it reasonable for them to have to do that?
I think that it's reasonable for them to have to do that. It would be their burden to show that it was an undue burden, but there's nothing unreasonable about having her work every Saturday and not Sunday or restructuring the schedule. That's specifically what the ADA suggests in trying to accommodate individuals. With respect to the third issue, we believe that there was evidence of a causal connection between Ms. Povey's complaints of discrimination and her termination. Ms. Povey's last complaint of discrimination was on August 8th, in which she told Kim Calabro that she had filed a charge with the EEOC. At that time, she had actually contacted the EEOC to begin the process. She was terminated less than 3 weeks later. Now, in between her complaint and her termination, she received her permanent impairment rating. But the facts surrounding her discharge suggest that it was not just an unfortunate consequence of her restrictions that led to her termination, but maybe something else. The fact is that the city never met with Ms. Povey to discuss with her what she could and could not do with her final restrictions. She asked to attend a meeting that they were going to have to discuss that, and she was refused attendance. The next thing she found out is that she was put on a medical leave of absence. Now, how she found that out is that she was given a letter by the Human Resources Director from the attorney saying that she was going to be put on a medical leave of absence. She asked why, but the Human Resources Director wouldn't tell her or talk to her about what was happening or why she was being placed on this leave, nor would her supervisor. They referred her instead to the city attorney. 3 days later, she got a letter handed to her from the Human Resources Director saying that she had been terminated from employment. The letter did not explain why she was being terminated from employment. The Human Resources Director didn't explain why, and when Ms. Povey asked why she was being terminated, again, she was referred to the attorney. So she followed up with the attorney to find out, why am I being terminated? Why won't you talk to me about what I could still do in this job? And the city attorney wouldn't talk to her either. Instead, he pointed back to this termination letter, but just informed her of her termination. We think that those circumstances and how she was being treated on the way out, coupled with the timing, is sufficient evidence for a jury to say that had she not complained of discrimination, they would have worked with her to try to keep her employed. The way that they treated her on the way out, by not talking to her, not engaging in the interactive process, not doing anything to try to maintain her employment, we believe is evidence that they wanted to terminate her employment, and it wasn't just an unfortunate consequence of her restrictions. Thank you.
Gosh, there's someone who looks so familiar over there. She belonged over there. Yeah. Hi, Ms. Newton.
Good morning again. I want to start by just talking about just a couple of quick facts that were brought up during some questions. As far as the lifting that was required during the job, actually that is how Ms. Povey injured herself initially, was lifting an animal, and that's how she had the initial injury to her right wrist. The other issue is concerning what volunteers do and don't do. The evidence that's in the record in the appellee's appendix at page 125 from the director of the shelter is that volunteers don't do those kind of employee duties. They come in, they walk dogs, they might do some sweeping and some like housekeeping type things up front, but they don't actually care for the animals. They aren't doing the same things as the employees are doing.
Now, she claims she can complete her work with minor accommodations. 15 minutes of assistance with the blue trays, limiting the amount of weight that goes into the cans of food and litter. And she made the suggestion that her husband would help her on Sundays. So is there any evidence in the record as to the feasibility or the cost of such accommodations? In other words, did the city put in any evidence that these were unreasonable or unduly burdensome in some way?
No, the city has taken the position and continues to take the position that that Ms. Pubby was not a qualified individual with a disability and therefore they weren't required to accommodate her at all. In fact, her argument that she's making on appeal here is that she was regarded as having a disability, which means she wasn't actually disabled, but the city thought she was, which calls into question whether or not there's even a requirement to accommodate someone who really isn't disabled and there's just a perception of disability. I think there you're getting onto some very shaky territory if that's a requirement that's been made, and it hasn't been made in this circuit or, as far as I know, in any others. Because you're actually proceeding under the regarded as prong here, not under the I am disabled.
Let's assume that there is an obligation to accommodate under a perception test, under the pre-amendment law, which we're operating under. And what can you say in answer to your brother's issue as to whether there was an interactive process? I mean, you did discuss whether she could do anything, but you didn't talk to her about it.
No, and the employer, as I said, has taken the position that there was no interactive process required here because she simply did not fulfill the ability of someone or the slot of somebody who's protected by the ADA. As far as accommodation, always kind of overlaps whether or not someone is capable of doing their duties. And Ms. Pubby's restrictions did not change significantly between the time that she was working and between the time that she got her permanent restrictions. And there were many things that she did not do at the facility. In fact, she testified that she couldn't work on weekends because she couldn't clean the entire facility. That's in her deposition testimony. And that's a requirement in the animal shelter. There's only 3 kennel attendants that work in the back of the animal shelter in Jeffersonville. And those 3 people have to be there, and somebody has to be there 7 days a week to take care of the animals. And on Saturdays, there's 2 employees, only because the shelter is open to the public, and so there's someone up front that's dealing with people coming in with animals or wanting to adopt animals, and she's consumed with those duties. What essentially happened here is for a period of time after the injury, while there was still hope that she was going to be able to return to be able to do all of her responsibilities, she was allowed an accommodation, in fact. She was allowed to pretty much pick and choose what she would and would not do. No one there is specifically assigned to certain things, and in fact, everyone needs to be able to do everything because you need to be able to work weekends so your coworkers aren't overburdened by the weekend duty. It was interfering with the entire workplace. And it was allowed for a certain amount of time until it was determined that she was never going to be qualified to do this position. So she was allowed to kind of pick and choose what duties she would do. She, you know, didn't lift the dog food bags and didn't do the blue trays and didn't, for a time, didn't pull around the hose to clean down the kennels. And there were certain things she didn't do because she said she couldn't. And that's what she informed the director of the Humane Society. And he pretty much gave her free will over what she would and wouldn't do.
What should we make of Calabro's claim that Wilder recommended firing her, and Wilder denies that he said that, because we've got a lot of cases saying that if the employer lies about the real reason for the termination, a jury may infer an improper reason.
I think that the record is extremely clear that what happened with this termination is the permanent restrictions were received by the Human Resources Department from Ms. Puppy's doctor. There was a meeting that was called that included the director, that included the Human Resources Director, that included an outside HR consultant came in, along with the city attorney. They all sat down, they looked at the job description, and they looked at the restrictions, and they compared them, and they said, she can't do this job. She's not able to do this job with this restriction. And going back into whether or not she was regarded as having an impairment, a substantially limiting impairment, that's further evidence of the fact that the city, not only does the city through its HR director deny again and again, we didn't think she was disabled, so we didn't have a duty to accommodate her. But she also, you know, the fact that they had this meeting to determine whether or not they were going to continue employing her based on these permanent restrictions just points out further that they weren't regarding her as disabled from all sorts of jobs, but rather they were looking at her as incapable of doing this particular job and unable to fulfill what was required by the job, which included taking the garbage out, lifting dog food bags, lifting animals, maybe not every day all the time, but enough that she wasn't able to, you know, carry her burden of what she needed to do. And as far as, again, you know, the accommodation question wraps back into this, she's not even claiming that she is disabled. She's claiming she was regarded as disabled. And whether or not an entity has to, an employer has to provide accommodation for someone who really isn't disabled becomes a real, for lack of a better term, hairball. We're talking about cats and dogs here. But because then the employer not only has to say, like this employer had to, is this person disabled in order to satisfy the ADA? This isn't an employer who's not thinking about the ADA. This is an employer who's thinking about the ADA. And says, not only is this person not disabled, but do we regard her as disabled, and then for we have to accommodate her? I mean, that becomes very sticky.
How do we factor in the fact that Calabro was very mistaken about her real situation? You know,
Calabro's testimony, if you go and look at it carefully, all the questions that were asked of Calabro were, what could she do in this job, what could she not do in this job? And her testimony goes to, I don't want her in there lifting anything more than 5 pounds because I don't want her getting hurt again. She's looking at this from a safety perspective as well, and that's what her testimony makes clear.
Well,
Not that she can't do all sorts of jobs.
What her testimony makes clear is that she could only use one hand, and she was restricted to lifting 5 pounds total.
Yes, because she did not – but she also acknowledged in her deposition, in her testimony that's in the record, that this was an injury only to the right hand, that it wasn't to the left hand. And she says at one point, I think she says, she's asked, well, couldn't she lift, you know, more than 5 pounds with the left hand? And she says, I suppose, or something to that effect. But her – what she was concerned with is that there would be these attempts to try to lift more than 5 pounds, and that, I mean, if you're lifting someone with both hands, your right hand's helping out somehow, and who's going to sit there and put something on a scale to determine how much it weighs before you, you know, try to lift it with both hands or one hand or whatever. But everything that is asked of all the questions that were asked and all the testimony that's been entered in the record talk about her job there, not what could she do anywhere else. And regardless, we go back to that essential question. Even if she's regarded as having a disability, do they have to accommodate her? And I believe the answer to that is no. Not for someone who's regarded as being disabled as opposed to actually being disabled on the other two prongs.
Even though by their actions, they sort of did.
Even if they regarded her as disabled, I don't understand how someone who is regarded as disabled but is in fact not substantially limited in a major life function, because they're not claiming that, how can that person be entitled to accommodation is the question. As far as the retaliation issue, it's very clear. First, we need to make sure that it's understood that Ms. Puppy didn't file any EEOC charge until after she was terminated. Now, there's testimony in the record that she threatened to do that. When she made her first complaint, the HR person in the city of Jeffersonville, Ms. Calabro, called in someone who was a former EEOC investigator to come in and do an outside investigation of this claim of harassment by a co-employee because of the purported disability. So this is an employer, again, who is ignoring their obligations. They're meeting their obligations. And, in fact, there's a determination that, no, there isn't any kind of unlawful harassment here, but they still make changes in the workplace to try to keep these two employees away from each other to promote harmony in the workforce. You know, they still tried to do what they needed to do in order to keep Ms. Povey employed until it was found out that she simply wasn't going to be able to do this job. It's a physical job that she wasn't going to be able to do with a 5-pound lifting restriction in her right wrist. Okay, that's all I have. Thank you.
How much time? Do you need another minute? Do you need 2 minutes?
2 minutes would be great.
Okay, 2 minutes. Oh, Lady Bountiful.
Your Honor, just a couple of points. First, with regard to whether an individual who is regarded as having a disability is due an accommodation, there is a split amongst the circuits, and the Seventh Circuit has not ruled one way or the other. Judge Hamilton, in a district court opinion, adopted the reasoning of the First Circuit in Katz v. City Metal, and the reasoning in an Eastern District of New York opinion, Jacques DiMarzio, which is in the briefs, that basically says that the ADA was intended to encourage accommodations and encourage this interactive process. And by saying that you don't have to accommodate somebody who you regard as being disabled, you're basically foreclosing that interactive process. And that's exactly what happened here. They never spoke with Ms. Povey about what she could and could not do. As Judge Coleman, you noted earlier, she couldn't do a lot of things even before she was injured, and that was apparently sufficient for her job. When she left employment, when she was terminated, she was back to being able to do those same things. She had restrictions, actual restrictions, but it was the perceived restriction and their perception of her that foreclosed her ability to continue working. They perceived her as having an overall 5-pound lifting restriction, and a lot of the testimony that they cite about what she could not do has to do with the 10-month period while she was recovering, and she had more significant limitations during then. By the time she was let go, which is the relevant time period, she only had the 5-pound lifting restriction in her hand, and she could do the essential functions of her job with the exception of lifting those blue trays. If the court has no other questions, then I'm all done.
We have half a minute. Thank you.
Thank you.
Case is taken under advisement, and we're going to go on to the last.